It angers me that I see her feeling like that, feeling like she's an alien, feeling like she shouldn't be in this country, and disappoints me because this is my country.
Welcome to Migration in Focus, Voices from the UK, a series that explores British people's perspectives on some of today's most pressing issues in the UK and beyond. Immigration, integration, and the coexistence of local citizens and newcomers. These themes touch all of us. I am Lara Momessu and your host for this series. I am based in Lancashire, where I moved for work some 8 years ago, as someone who understands both the challenges of being a migrant and the strain migration can place on local communities. I'm also deeply concerned by the tone of the current debate in the UK. That's why I created this podcast in collaboration with Work Better Innovations, a social enterprise focused on migrant integration, human rights, and responsible supply chains. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Migration in Focus, Voices from the UK. In this first episode, we will be talking about families where one of the partners comes from abroad. According to the annual population survey, in 2023, an estimated 9.2 million foreign-born people aged 18 and older were living in the UK. Of these, approximately 2.9 million said that they originally moved to the country mainly to join or accompany a British citizen or UK settled resident. This means that around one-third of all the adult foreign-born in the UK are family unification migrants. On top of this, there are many immigrants who enter the country for other reasons, let's say work or study, for example, and only then met their British partner without necessarily going through the family reunion process. This means that the number of families with a partner from abroad is actually much bigger. What kind of challenges and opportunities do these families have as a consequence of the fact that one of the members is non-British? Also, the current anti-immigration sentiments might also have an impact on the sense of security and belonging the members of these families might have with Britain. It's a really broad theme, touching on everything from how visa rules affect the family economy to the unique challenges and opportunities that come with a relationship in which members are from different countries and cultures. So to explore this, I will be joined by Ross, a British citizen whose wife is from Poland. Her name is Krisha. Ross and Krisha have been married for 3 years, and together they have experienced firsthand what it means to build a family that brings together two worlds, the British and the Polish one. And I'm here to ask a few questions to Ross. Ross, thank you very much for being with us today.
No problem at all.
So let's start at the beginning, Ross. How did you two meet and decide to start a relationship and family together?
Well, we met about 8 years ago at a place that I used to work at. She was in quality and I was in production. We just got to know each other really well, and things went from there, really blossomed from there. We've been together like 8 years and married for three. Like you say, we've got a beautiful daughter. I don't think we actually anything planned. I think we were just rolling with it. I was married previously for 10 years. So I've been divorced, and then, you know, I met Krisha at a great time, and everything's been great since.
That's nice to hear. So how do your respective families and friends view your relationship?
My family's we're quite a close family anyway. As I see it, that, you know, they adore Krisha. I think they really, really interested in Polish traditions, you know, and customs and things like that. And my dad in particular, he's always asking, you know, and trying to show, you know, that they're really interested in and want to bring that culture, especially now having a granddaughter in River, my daughter, you know, that they really, really enjoy it. My friends, to be honest with you, my friends, they're completely different. They don't see Krisha as being Krisha from Poland. It's Chrisha from Wigan, as far as they're concerned. They just don't look at her that she's from Europe. You know, they're quite laid back. They're quite down to earth, and they just like Chrisha for who Chrisha is, and you know, just like everybody else. I think it's great that she's interacted really well with my family and my friends, and you know, I'll do the same and support her family and friends as best I can as well. You know, obviously there is a bit of a language barrier between me and Chrisha's family in particular, because I'm ignorant in a sense that I've not learned the Polish language as much as I'd like to. But to be honest with you, you know, I actually get on with them. Strangely enough, I do get on with them really well, and we go and see them quite regular. And even though we don't communicate as best as what we could, it's great, you know, that we're all very fond of each other.
It's actually very interesting what you said about your friends and family seeing Chrisha for as a Wiganer, or anyway for Chrisha herself. And that's, I think, very often is the point of end and departure of the whole immigration debate that exists at the moment. When we humanize an individual, it's not anymore necessarily an immigrant, it's a person, it's a friend, it's your daughter-in-law. When did she arrive in the UK? Once there is a distance, there is no relationship and so on and so forth, it becomes more difficult to see the human element of the other, with quotation mark.
Now, she'd probably kill me for mentioning her age, but she's 42.
Oh, it's very young.
Yeah, she arrived here when she was 22. So she's been here about 20 years. She lived down south at first. And I've no idea why she came and went up north and moved to Wigan. So yeah, she's been here about 22 years. And to be honest with you, you know, obviously you can tell in terms of her accent and things like that that she's not from Wigan. But you know, a communication with people, and she I wouldn't say she's bought into the English culture, but she's bought into the northern culture, which I think sometimes is a little bit different. And yes, you know, everyone just sees her as a local, if you like, you know.
How does she see herself, as a local or as an immigrant? Or
no, I think she, when we first met, she was quite paranoid. I won't say paranoid. She didn't have much confidence in communicating with people. So it was difficult, you know, having telephone calls with people on certain things, you know, for instance, if she had to ring up for customer service on, I don't know, Sky or something along that, she didn't have that confidence. I don't know why, because, you know, her English language is really good. I think just in general, I think she just struggles to get her point across sometimes as much as she'd like to. She was worried that came across in a different light than how she tried to execute it. So, you know, sometimes, I mean, the Polish are known to be quite abrupt, shall we say, and Chrisha is paranoid that comes across that way, because people then will have this thought that, you know, the Polish are all rude and abrupt, and it's not like that. She sometimes says things how it is, which I love. She puts me in my place, but us English in particular can get very offended by that at times. And she was very wary that she didn't want to do that or upset anyone.
Does this, her personality, her actually cultural personality, does it ever create tensions or misunderstandings between the two of you?
Absolutely. I think because us English sit on the fence sometimes and don't like to say things that may upset other individuals, whereas Chrisha's very much, she just says it, and it does. And me being a man, obviously, you know, I'm very, very soft and get easily offended, and it does happen sometimes where we bicker. But it's funny because when she bickers and she goes upstairs, she bickers in Polish, so I don't know what she's saying. I think she does that on purpose, you know. I wouldn't like to know what she's actually saying, to tell you the truth, but.
So how does this make you feel?
It makes me feel like I'm lazy and I'm ignorant and I'm not going learning that language. I need to do better. I should do better. And it is on my horizon.
And why you didn't learn it so far?
I'd love to make the excuse that I'm really busy, but that's too easy to say. I think there's a bit of fear as well. I'm you know, when I was at school many years ago, I did struggle with languages, you know. I think that's it. And sometimes, you know, when we do go to Poland, and I don't know, I'll ask for something in Polish. You know, I get paranoid then. So I probably feel in the way Chris is feeling when she's ringing up, you know, these customer services, or she's having a meeting at work or something like that. So it's probably, you know, thinking about it now, it's exactly the same as the way that she feels probably.
Did you have any perception of Poland before the two of you met? Any ideas or even biased or not biased, any views of Poland? Because actually here in the north, we also have many Polish people. This can come out of imagining Poland, but also interacting with Polish people.
Yeah. I mean, where I grew up, I never came across any Polish people or anything like that. So I did have a perception of Poland in itself. And honestly, I can't tell you why I had that perception, whether it was something on TV, whether it was, I've no idea. But the perception I had of Poland and Polish peoples was very much, there was miserable, there was stubborn, there was rude. But of Poland in general, I had this perception that it was, I don't know, very out of date, you know, so very much still in the 80s, if you like, and a dictatorship for some reason. I don't know why I had that. I think it was maybe, you know, with the war and everything like that. Again, I don't know why, but I could just see Poland being full of housing estates, so just flats, rundown flats, you know, and things like that. Oh my God, I was completely wrong, you know, completely wrong.
In which way can you?
Oh, I mean, with the Polish people, you know, they are abrupt. They are very, they'll say it how it is, but they're so friendly, you know, really, really friendly. In particular, you know, my family, we have friends that are Krzysia's friends that actually she grew up with that live locally to us. So she's known them all her life, and you know, we regularly go out with them and you know, have some really, really good times with them. Very nice people, very family focused, very family orientated, which it didn't shock me, but it's something that stood out to me, you know, very kids, and you know, they really the wives completely do everything for them, and I mean absolutely everything for them. Don't get me wrong, you know, my mother was really good with my father, but they did things together, you know, they did. There wasn't one or the other that was doing, what should we say, all the housework and all the errands and looking after the kids. It was very much a two-way street in what I'm used to, but over there, that, you know, the women just do everything. They run the house. Don't get me wrong, the guys go out and they work, and they work 12-hour shifts, you know, 7 days a week. But you know, the women just run the show, and they are actually the boss of the family, if you like. You know, the head of the family. So from that point of view, you know, the people did great. I think they're genuine. But Poland itself, we've been to many parts of Poland. It's absolutely beautiful. The country is absolutely beautiful. It's just filled with forests, which I couldn't believe. You know, when we saw it, it's so clean. It's so, you know, the weather's not too much different to what we see here. You know, probably obviously in winter, the snow is really, really bad. And in summer, it's very, very hot. But it's just a beautiful place, you know. And again, I don't know why I thought of this, whether it's me being naive or daft or stupid, but the beaches, they've got beaches all across Poland. They're absolutely beautiful, you know. I've been going to Spain and places like that all my life on holiday, and now suddenly I want to go Poland every year just because of, you know, the people, the way people treat you and the places that we go and see, you know. I mean, round here, I'd never go on a bike with Krzysia and River and go and have a ride, but over there it's the thing to do, you know, and people go and set picnics and go to forest and then go to the beach, and it's completely different to what I expected.
So that's in a way, the influence that Krisha had on you. You started a relationship and she opened up a world to you.
Absolutely. She does that. It's not just because she's, you know, from Poland, but there's a lot of things in life. You know, again, at times I have point of views with a lot of things, and she's probably the only one that's been able to show me a different side of things, if you like, a different viewpoint of certain things. And, you know, it's been great. I love it. You're learning every day, you know, and there's different things and that I never thought I'd be interested in. They do interest me. So yeah, it's fantastic.
What about the perception of other British people around you of Polish and or Poland? Is it similar to the one you were describing before?
I think if you'd have asked me that 15 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I think there was this perception that when Polish people came to this country, they was taking everybody's jobs. And, you know, probably at the time, I probably had the same perception. God, she's going to kill me when I get home. I probably had the same perception in a sense of, you know, we're letting all these Polish people come and take our work on the building sites and the factories and we're not doing anything. But my perception completely changed because, you know, I got to know Krisha through work, and her work values and ethics are completely the reason why she got the job where I used to work before. It had nothing to do with where she's from or anything like that. I think she's a good worker. She's got good behaviours. She's very flexible, and they're all very, very similar in that way. And that's what companies look for.
There are so many and so confusing narratives about immigration. One is about illegal immigration, and there is also one about, as you were explaining, about jobs, immigrants stealing jobs. So whenever you hear this kind of statements that are kind of discrepancies with the reality, you know, do you challenge them?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, anyone that knows me knows that I don't mind challenging people. I don't back down from that. I think you're completely right. And the problem with the way things are at the minute is no one's seeing the two separate issues. So we have immigration over here. We need immigration for people to come and do the work and the skills and bring that to this country. That's absolutely right. That is, we need it. It's as simple as that. And then there's illegal immigration, as you said, but people are putting them in the same category wrongly. But also, I think there's, from my own point of view, my own feelings, we do need to be careful with it, because I'll be honest with you now, I'm looking at from a political point of view, I don't know who I would vote for, because I think they're all as bad as each other in terms of, I don't think they know what they want or what they need. I think if people are challenging the illegal immigration, you know, you get branded far right or racist, which is incorrect. I think people do have concerns with illegal immigration, but I also think we need to look at the people who they are. I mean, we've got a family that live next door, but three, a wife, a husband, two daughters, absolutely brilliant people, really nice people. But these are families, you know, what we see in, who I believe should be able to stay within the country and then be able to seek to stay here. Unfortunately, we're getting a lot of people over who the government don't even know who they are. And that's the danger. And that's where I think politically they're all playing each other off to increase their popularity. And unfortunately, I think it's making the country a boiling point.
Yeah, I mean, politically is a reaction to each other. I mean, I don't want to go into a political debate or parties' names and so on and so forth, but there is a leading narrative and then everyone trying to pick on that in different ways. So creating, in my view, even more confusion.
Yeah. See, they don't see what I have to live with as well. So they don't see the fact that my wife, who's very, she doesn't like to show any, as daft as this sounds, doesn't like to show any sign of weakness or, you know, that she's upset or anything like that. But there's times that she has asked the question to me about, you know, what happens if I have to go, you know, what will happen then? And I can't believe that we're even discussing that. You know, a person that's been here 20 years, she's got no criminal record. She's worked for those full 20 years. She's put into the system. She now has a child in this country. She's married. She has a home. She's a mortgage. And for her to feel like that because of other people's, because they're trying to gain popularity throughout the country, I think it's just sad. I think it's terribly, terribly sad. And if that's where we've got to, it's shocking.
How does this make you feel as a British person?
It angers me for that reason. I think people have the right to protest and have the right to have their opinions. But I think you need to look at the individuals as well. Chris is as English as a lot of these people that are going out campaigning. She's patriotic to Poland, but she is for England as well. She's got a daughter who's half Polish, half English. She loves this country. This country's given her opportunity through work and through family and everything like that. So it angers me that I see her feeling like that, feeling like she's an alien, feeling like she shouldn't be in this country. I think it's disgusting, to tell you the truth. But it does. It angers me and disappoints me because this is my country. And at times, I'm ashamed of to say it is my country because of those, you know, the country over many, many generations has been through everything in terms of war and COVID and everything else, like many, many other countries. And to turn its back on people that want to be here, it really infuriates me.
So has your wife's status and identity as an immigrant in the UK, did it ever have an impact on the choices you made as a couple or family?
No. So when my daughter was born, so it was actually going, because we've come out of Brexit and everything like that, the European Union. When we was travelling to Poland, for whatever reason, I don't know the ins and outs of it properly, but my daughter, she had to have a Polish passport, a Polish ID card, and she has a UK passport anyway. And I remember she just had a UK passport before we knew all this information, if I'm being honest. And we went to the passport control and handed our passports over. And obviously Christian had a Polish one and me and River had a UK one. And they were questioning about River because she didn't have this Polish ID or Polish passport. And what they were saying is they can refuse for her to not leave the country to come back to the UK if we don't get it sorted by a certain deadline. And it was a bit of an eye-opener, really. I think that was the part that made you think, oh, my God, you know, my wife is from Poland. Oh, my God, I am from the UK. And this poor little girl in the middle, you know, for them to not let her travel back to England, I just couldn't get my head around it. So we went and seek some support and advice. And anyway, we did. We had to go and get a Polish ID card and also a Polish passport for River so she can travel to Poland and freely and there not be an issue. Again, I don't really know the ins and outs and why that was. I think things like that do open your eyes to it. Yeah, it was a strange one, very strange.
It makes me connect with what you said before about illegality, because again, in the narrative, public narrative, whenever we assess as citizens, that person is illegal, that person is legal. It's already wrong to say illegal, but let's say that we use this terminology at the moment. The point is that if you really look at the details, the condition between being legal in a country or lose that right to be legally in that to legally stay in that country is very thin, and it can change at any moment. This is an example of how subtle or how quick it could be that you lose control of your right to be in a place.
I think it did with us as well, but it makes you quite vulnerable as well to think that at any moment, you know, your family could be could be torn apart, you know. My daughter, she's autistic as well, so she's got autism, and she's very, very much a mummy's girl. So to think that, I don't know whether they could take Grisha away. It wouldn't, I would never let it happen. I don't care what the results would be, but you know, I think it's scary. I think it's very, very scary, and that's why I think sometimes when people make statements to influence people's views, they need to be really, really careful, because we're not talking about young lads that are coming over here. We're talking about families, and that's my worry.
Yes, I completely agree. And again, once we start to look at the details of people's life, we start to also see all these nuances that shape your condition of someone with the right to remain or not the right to remain, and all these kind of categories, legal categories that we talk about. Yeah, so I think I just ask you a couple of other questions. Are you scared of what you see happening around you?
Yeah, I'm worried that it potentially could. I think I'm fearful for, it does sound a bit extreme, this, but I am scared that, you know, Krisha could be out shopping one day with River and someone, you know, in the public, you know, they'll hear her accent and just say something not very nice to her, or even, you know, even worse. I do feel like the country's getting to that point, you know. I just think people need to be really, really careful, because they're inciting hatred. I don't think they're inciting violence. I think they're inciting hatred. But what happens is hatred leads to violence. And when I see Krisha, and she would never lay her cards on the table, if you like. She would always keep things quite close to her chest. And when she's asking me, you know, things like that, what would happen if I did have to go back, and what would we do if this? And that does get me worried, because, you know, for her to feel like that, it gets me worried, and it does make me very, very angry.
Krisha doesn't have British citizenship, I guess.
No, she's got a
indefinite leave to remain.
Yes.
It was a safe zone to be, but it's less and less safe.
It is now, and you know, and that's, I think that was the point when Krisha was getting a little bit worried, you know.
I just want to ask you a very last question in light of today's conversation. How would you like the world in which your child grows up to be? What do you think is important to do in order to make it closer to your ideal?
Acceptance. I think everyone should be willing to accept everybody. Listen, I'm not going to give a Martin Luther King speech or anything like that. Acceptance in everything. So not just necessarily from where you're from and different cultures and different religions and different backgrounds. I just think with everything, you know, at times people are so easy to judge others. And I don't know why. I think sometimes we just should just, life's hard enough, and we should all just not have to deal with this worry of people not accepting you for who you are. And that's my worry, you know. I mean... In particular, with River being, you know, she's autistic, that makes me want people to accept her even, you know, even more so. Not because, you know, her mother's from Poland or her father's from England, but because of her, you know, the way she is. So for me, I think if everyone would accept everyone for whoever they are and whatever they're having to live with day to day, because everyone struggles. Everyone goes through, you know, tough patches, and everyone goes through really traumatic times. And I think people sometimes should understand that. And I think then once you accept people for the way they are and who they are, I think the world will be such a better place.
I guess that this message of hope brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much, Ross, for opening up with us and sharing yours and your family story with me and with the listeners. And until next time, bye for now to everyone, and stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you very much.